Star Wars Action News presents Republic Forces Radio Network, bringing you coverage of Star Wars, The Clone Wars. Our hosts will review the toys, books, comics, games, and all things related to the Clone Wars animated series. And after each new episode airs on Cartoon Network, our hosts will recap and review the show. And we want to hear your thoughts on The Clone Wars. Call us at 415-508-JEDI every Saturday after a new episode, and your call may be played on the air.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Republic Forces Radio Network. We're here to give the RFR enters who didn't have a chance to weigh in on the mall episodes their chance to give us their thoughts on the, what some people refer to as a four-part arc, and others refer to as the two-parters. We're going to get their thoughts on those episodes, and if they thought they were as game-changing as our own Nathan P. Butler did. Remember last week he said that he would be willing to cast aside previous Clone Wars EU in lieu of the Clone Wars cartoon now. So we'll see what the other panelists think. And for those of you keeping score at home, who hopefully you haven't forgotten, those panelists are Jen.
Hey, guys.
Jonathan.
Hey, everyone. Good to be back.
And the man with 35 titles, Barrett.
Hey, everybody. It's Barrett, Master Collect 'em All from the Forums, your Swan Holocron Enhancer, and sometimes co-host of RFRN. Glad to be back with you again, Rockstar.
All right, and we are going to discuss the four parts of the Maul arc, and we're going to kick it all off, jumping right in to part one, Massacre, which, if everyone remembers, took place on Dathomir and was, for all intents and purposes, the end of the Night Sisters that we had dealt with, at least, at the hands of the Separatists. So let's get started with what you guys thought about that particular episode, and let's kick it off with Jen, our own Night Sister.
This episode kind of bothered me a little bit just because it was so disjointed and kind of all over the place. I liked that stuff happens that's important, like people die and like a whole culture is wiped out, and that's pretty exciting because usually the status quo doesn't change a whole lot at the end of any episode. So that was pretty cool. I had some problems with some of the logic behind some of it, but it was pretty interesting. This is making me really feel for Asajj Ventress. This is making me like her more, and I want to see more of her story, and I'm getting more and more concerned that she's not going to live that much longer.
All right, Jonathan?
As far as Massacre went, I liked it, but I felt like it was drawing in from some other genres. We saw zombies in this episode, or, you know, the undead Night Sisters, which, you know, in first viewing I thought was really cool. But then I'm thinking about it, and even though despite we've had two EU novels that deal with zombies in Star Wars, I've never felt that that's been completely Star Wars like for me. But I mean, I liked the action. I thought some of it was, you know, a little questionable as far as, like Jen said, the logic of some of the things that happened. First of all, you would think that if Dooku wanted revenge on the Night Sisters, he would have done it a little bit quicker, you know, strike fast, strike hard, rather than waiting all that time. And also that it kind of opens up a question: what was Asajj doing in all that time between the end of the Savage Opress arc last season to now? But I mean, I understand why this episode was needed to sort of set the stage for what came in the following three episodes. But again, I wouldn't call it one of my favorites.
All right, and Baron.
Zombie. I mean, come on, you guys. Zombie Night Sisters. I mean, it was tight. This was what has to be one of my favorite episodes, one of my favorite arcs, but this one was so dope. When I went to the rendering panel at San Diego Comic-Con last year, this was one of the clips that they showed us about Dooku taking revenge on Asajj. So I've been waiting all season to see how exactly he was going to accomplish this. You know, it was hinted at way back then, and I've been drooling to see the Night Sisters versus the Separatist forces all year. And I was not disappointed. I mean, they brought out some terrific weapons, and the Walker Night Sisters, the way that they came out of their pods and the way they looked and how they fought. And it just all came together for me for this episode. I mean, there were some things I didn't like, but it had nothing to do with the story or had nothing to do with the way things looked. It was more of like, I wish the Night Sisters had kind of defended themselves a little bit more without getting wiped out. So I like to agree with what you said about how Nathan described it, and as well with Jen, how this is a game changer. Usually you have, at the end of a show, nothing really major that happens, but this was a complete wipeout of a whole civilization, of a whole sisterhood. And, you know, that's, I have no complaints about this. The only kind of complaint I had was that the Night Sisters didn't defend themselves as much as I thought they should. You know, they kind of at the end kind of put their guard down and kind of got slaughtered without putting up much of a fight. But it seemed like when with Asajj getting taken out, their whole defenses kind of went down. But that is real Star Wars like, because as we know in Return of the Jedi, that when the Emperor goes down, all the forces start going down. So it was still, you know, a nod to what we see in the movies. But I loved it. I mean, I had a great time watching it. My son had a great time watching it with me. And it was popcorn flying in the air all night.
Now, before we move on to Bounty, I want to touch on a point Jen kind of brought up. At the end of this episode, you kind of get the feeling that we're supposed to be on Asajj's side. At this time, were you guys able to be at that point?
Well, I felt for, I mean, this is a character who has had everything stripped away. And this isn't just the first time that this has happened to her. I mean, you think through her history as defined by the Clone Wars. She was initially taken away from Dathomir as an infant. Then she saw the person, whoever that was, that was caring for her initially, die. And then she was adopted by a Jedi Master who she built a bond with. He died. And she kind of had to sort of function on her own in a very, very hostile environment. Then she kind of allies herself with Dooku. He teaches her and you assume makes some promises as to treat her like an apprentice. She works and she puts her heart into it. She really is loyal to him. And he betrays her based on Sidious's orders. So then, again, she loses everything. She goes to the Night Sisters. And then, you know, the whole, you know, she's sort of built that relationship there. She finally, after the failed attempt on Dooku and, you know, Savage going rogue, she comes back to the Night Sisters, again, to try to build a life. And that's stripped away from her, too. I mean, even though she is, quote unquote, the villain, or one of the villains that we've been dealing with for the past several seasons, she's still, you know, almost like a, you know, sometimes I guess I almost kind of saw a lost little girl aspect to her, especially after the Savage Opress arc last year. So I did feel for her there when she's, you know, she's there in the middle of the forest/swamp and, you know, begging them not to leave her because she really has no place else to go.
I like a lot that they're developing her, because most of the time it's kind of weird, actually. In most like books and series, I tend to get more interested in the villains a lot of the time, just because a lot of their backstories and a lot of their character arcs seem to be very complex. Sometimes they're really tragic and they can be really fascinating. And we haven't really had that so much. I mean, Sidious is kind of interesting in that he's just so conniving. It's fun to see him working behind the scenes, but like, he's not terribly interesting in any other way. And like Dooku, he never really does anything for me. He's just kind of this old, like very authoritative villain who doesn't really do a whole lot. And Grievous is just unfortunately kind of a joke in this series. So I'm really excited to see Ventress do something and get some development and just get to see her on her own instead of her just being a pawn of Dooku. So again, I'm kind of concerned that now that they're making her more accessible to the audience that they're going to kill her off, but I like it.
Oh, I've been on Ventress's side ever since the Night Sisters arc from last year when we got to see, Jonathan, had you mentioned where exactly she came from, what she had to go through, all the loss that she had, because she never started out evil. You know, she never started out conniving, evil. She was just a Force-sensitive baby and taken away from her family, and she was basically forced to do what she had to do to survive. And after losing a guardian and a master, you know, she was just basically lost when Dooku found her. And, you know, seeing how she used to look when she had some hair and she was had the big blue eyes and she was smiling and cute, you know, I really did feel for her. She had me then. And it's just very exciting to see her have to, you know, go back with her tail between her legs to Mother Talzin and ask for help. And she's still trying to get, you know, revenge on Dooku. And he's just way too powerful. You know, he's just too powerful a foe. But I like the fact that it's coming around with her personality that she is not this all-encompassing evil person. You know, she has what she wants. She has things that she wants to do. You know, it's not like she craves power, you know, like a Darth Maul or like Sidious did, you know, when it comes to other Sith masters and apprentices. She's not trying to crave power. She's just trying to fit in. She's just trying to have a family, just trying to have a circle where that she belongs to. And, you know, we'll see the other circles that she's trying to get in and belong to as this arc keeps going on. But yeah, to answer your question, I'm totally in Asajj's place. I'm totally in her corner right now.
You know, to follow up on what you said, this is definitely a character who has defined her existence by those people around her. She's never really existed for herself. You know, she would act and behave based on who she was with. And I think we see that with the, as you said, the continuation of this arc, that she kind of develops, okay, what do I want for my life? What am I going to do with my life? And, you know, this is really sort of the lost child looking for where she belongs.
Oh, Jonathan, I totally agree with you. And I guess the reason I kind of can feel her is because, you know, it's kind of like a gang member. You know, growing up in South Central, you have a lot of gang members and you are in a community. And if you're in the community where people are gangbanging, then that's kind of what you fall into. If you're in the community where in that same gangbanging community, but you're in the church kind of community, then that's what you fall into. And some people go back and forth depending on where they move, depending on the friends they hang out with. So it's kind of like that. And I guess I kind of see that kind of myself in her. What you just said, depending on who she's around is depending on who she wants to please. And she's never really doing it for herself, you know. So eventually you have to figure out what you're going to do for yourself, what you want to do, what do you want to accomplish in your life. And I think Asajj is getting to that point to where she's going to start living for her now and not the Crips or the Bloods or the Jedi and the Sith.
All right. Well, now we know what Jonathan, Jen, and Barrent thought about Massacre. Well, let's take this chance to get a few voicemails and see what you guys thought of Massacre.
Hi, this is Chris. Long-time listener, but a first-time caller. I'm calling in about the new Clone Wars episode on last night. And I must say, overall, it was a very, very well-done episode for me. I personally liked it. I liked how we got to see more of the Night Sisters and their religious backgrounds. And the thing I think I liked the most is I was listening to your episode 3 audiobook, and I just like how General Grievous was more like how he originally was portrayed. This is monster with parts here and there, and I actually wanted to see more of that into the show. Overall, thought it was a wonderful show, and thank you for what you are doing, and I hope that you keep doing it. I enjoy the show, and I'll enjoy to hear what you all say about this episode. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, Republic Forces Radio Network, it's Zach, and I'm here to give you my thoughts on Star Wars, The Clone Wars Massacre, and what a massacre it was. I could not believe what I saw. I just want to go into my thoughts on the whole, you know, all the Night Sister dead zombies. Those things were, like, cool. That was better than anything in Red Harvest or Death Troopers, honestly. And now that we've got Ventress out there, as a wild card, and I was kind of expecting her to die in this episode. I mean, I know that would mess up a bunch of stuff in continuity and stuff, but the Clone Wars is able to override any EU it wants to, so, you know. And, man, I could not believe the level of brutality that was put on the Night Sisters, you know, like, they all got shot, basically, and it was a massacre, I'll just put it at that. And, you know, my thoughts on General Grievous in this episode, for a while there, while he was fighting Ventress, he kind of did seem like the mustache-twirling villain that Jen always says that he is, but near the end where he started killing a bunch of Night Sisters and killed that old ancient Night Sister lady that brought all the dead Night Sisters back to life. And one more question on my thought here. Is Mother Talison dead and that she has some kind of a force ghost or something like that? I don't know. Maybe one of you can clarify that for me. Well, and it looks like next week we're going to be having a bounty hunter episode, then they're going to be chasing after Ventress now. And from the looks of it, it looks like Boss did escape from prison. So, yeah, I'll call in next week to give you my thoughts on bounty.
Hey, this is Glenn calling in about the Star Wars Clone Wars episode. I forget what it was called, but you know what it was. And I really enjoyed this episode, seeing the return to Dathomir and the Night Sisters. Very happy that they, unlike per se the Mandalorian arc, where they've, you know, made this sort of bring into the EU that sort of changes what people thought was happening on the planet and whatnot. At least this time they've gone and they've sort of been explaining, you know, what happened to the Night Sisters. I had suspected that there would be something that Palpatine Sidious would have done, you know, after he gained power. He would have, you know, destroyed these pockets of force users that were around the galaxy. You know, Dooku wants to do it. That's probably fine. Probably works out well for the Sith, no matter who's, you know, leading the charge there. Considering how weak the defenses seem to be that the Night Sisters had on the planet, though, I was a bit surprised that they couldn't have just done, you know, aerial bombardment. You know, we just saw, most of us already just saw Phantom Menace as a theater, and, you know, before the, you know, they send out the battle droids, they try to use, you know, I mean, in this case, they try to send out, you know, tanks first and just shoot them all up before they send out the, you know, the, what is it, artillery? You know, that's what the right word, infantry. And, you know, before you do that, you know, you might try to just, you know, do aerial bombardment, I guess, and you couldn't really do that because you didn't know where the army was going to be, I guess. You weren't trying to take out the city. But here, I mean, they have a stronghold, they have a base of operations, you could have, and you're taking them completely by surprise because they apparently don't have much of, you know, I don't know, satellite, radar, or whatever you've been needing, you need to have. I mean, you know, I guess a lot of people don't know that they're there on Dathomir, that it's kind of a secret. You know, they seem basically defenseless. They just had, they had no perimeter guns, they had nothing, they just had themselves. So, not really surprising that they got wiped out. I mean, they obviously they were able to use their Sith magics to put up some sort of a defense, but I mean, they were barely, you know, pretty much completely overwhelmed there. And you would have thought they would have had that something better than that. I was a little bit disappointed, but I mean, you know, it was a good battle, but I mean, you could have just had one really good, you know, whatever that bomb was that they were testing against the Lemur people way back in season one, you know, when George Takei character, not thinking of his name right now, but I mean, just, you know, throw that there on the planet, boom, all dead. You don't need to go down there at all. But it's interesting to finally see, you know, sort of, you could take some damage, even if it wasn't really even in person, because, you know, we've talked about how, you know, Ahsoka seems to get, he's getting through scot-free, you know, and Anakin gets hurt there, and Obi-Wan gets hurt there, and, you know, we hadn't really thought about the fact that, you know, Dooku's not taking any kind of damage, but that happened here in this episode, so I kind of like that. not going to make that a costume variation, although that might be kind of a curious thing to do. Maybe I will make that a costume variation. PQ with boils. I don't know if I can make a mother talisman coming out of my chest. That might be difficult. But, I enjoyed it. Interested to see where it's going to go. I think, the only thing that sort of was really kind of disappointing, though, even though I questioned the military tactics, was that it happened so fast. Ventress comes back, and she seems like she's sort of really kind of hesitant, but sort of willing to join back with her sisters. And before they can even start doing anything and training and learning what it's like to be a sister, they're under attack, and they get to see that she's the only one that survives. And it's like, she's all alone again. And she had her sisters for like 10 minutes. It was like, oh, well, now I got to go start over again, and I have no idea where to go. So I'm even more lost. So, it's very interesting to see where this is going to go. It felt like to me that this episode sort of, this first episode has happened sometime really in the interim between, the end of the Night Sister arc and now. And then the next episode is coming up with her being a bounty hunter. I think this is what really is taking place sort of, in the time frame that's following this previous arc with Nadu. I'm curious, interested to see where it goes. I mean, I know that we're sort of going to have Darth Maul or whatever here, but I'm just very interested to see what's going to be happening here, and I'll call up with something much more interesting to say, hopefully, next week. Bye.
Okay, now let's move on to the second episode, Bounty.
All right, well, the episode of Bounty, there again, as with some of the others in this arc, there were good points about it, and there were not so good points about it. I've always found some interest in the whole sort of bounty hunter component of the Star Wars universe. Although I gotta say, and this has come up for me several times in the Clone Wars series, that I always kind of interpreted a bounty hunter as somebody who worked, primarily alone or in a small, very, very small group. And they were always to hunt somebody down. Because for me, the definition of a bounty hunter is somebody who goes and seeks a bounty, captures that person for doing whatever, and turns them in. But in Star Wars, it seems like bounty hunters are sort of your multi-purpose. They're more of mercenaries. They'll do anything for money, whether it be protect somebody, catch somebody, act as a pseudo-military force, whatever they need to do. So I'm kind of viewing them more as mercs than as bounty hunters. It was interesting to see the further development of Boba Fett, but I think this was might have been mentioned on the earlier episode, or maybe it was when I was talking to some other people. I'm wondering if they're giving Boba Fett too much screen time, because I think one of the best things about Boba Fett when you go back to the original trilogy is that he was somewhat of an enigma. I mean, there was lots of people or lots of things out there that, maybe this was who he is. There was a lot of rumors and have you. And it made the character more interesting. Kind of spelling everything out for this character seems to diminish him. As far as Asajj's motivation to join this group, again, it was a little quirky, and I know that was discussed in, by the rest of the group, but, you kind of get past it. The thing for me that really kind of pulled me out of the episode was the inclusion of the ninjas when they got to the planet. And maybe lots of people liked that. Maybe some people thought it was interesting. But again, it kind of combines two genres that I don't necessarily think that they mix well, ninjas and Star Wars. The one thing I did like about this episode, though, is the further sort of development of the Ventress character. I'm just not sure it needed to be done this way.
Alrighty, Barrett?
Oh, once again, I love this episode. A lot of people had some talk on the forums of how this is kind of a filler episode, and it really didn't go with the arc, but I love this episode. And to your point about the ninjas, Jonathan, we had ninjas before. They were just mechanical ninjas. Remember back in Rookies where we had those battle droids that were doing flips and stuff like that, and they were black super, or not super battle droids, but they were black kind of battle droids that were very fast and ninja-like. So we have had ninjas way back when. I think that was season one or season two, right, with Rookies. And the ninjas didn't really bother me. These are the points I really loved about this episode. One,
We saw that Boba Fett's out there, that he did escape with that prison breakout back in the episode where Obi-Wan was impersonating Rako Hardeen. So Boba and Bosk have escaped. So they're out there causing trouble, you know, doing dirt. That is one thing I really, really like. So there is a backstory there of where, how they decided to get back together and join a team and find this other bounty hunter with the scales and the spark or the thorns out of her face. So, I mean, just having that there, you know, my mind just filled myself up with EU, possible EU stories that could be told. But then we have Asajj Ventress embracing the bounty hunter. And how cool is Asajj's outfit? It's kind of like a tabard, Jedi tabard skirt type of thing. She's got her lightsabers out. You know, she's not hiding at all that she has lightsabers. You know, and it's just, I loved it. I loved how she joins the group. You know, she kills one of their members. Boss says, look, you need to go ahead and you owe us a member now, you know. And she does the honorable thing, you know, and joins the group. What else is she going to do? She has nowhere to go, you know. So I took this as what Jonathan said earlier about how she has to act about like the people she's in, you know. She has to when in Rome, you know, you act like a Roman. So she's really embracing this bounty hunter thing. And I think this is kind of the path that she would have taken if Dooku wouldn't have found her, you know, or maybe even if that Jedi Master when she was younger wouldn't have found her after her guardian was killed. She might have just naturally used the talent she had and became a bounty hunter, you know, because we've seen in this universe, in the Clone Wars universe, bounty hunters are not always evil people. You know, they go where the money's at. So she could actually be ruthless when she had to, or she could be good when she had to, you know, to protect some farmer somewhere. So I really love this story. And to your point, Jonathan, about Boba Fett and how he was sort of this enigma in the original trilogies, that was one of the things I didn't like. I wanted more Boba Fett. I wanted to see his background. I wanted to see his face. You know, I wanted to see the inner workings of Slave One. And they are giving that to us now, you know, how he's trained, what type of things he's had to go through to toughen himself up to become the greatest bounty hunter, you know, in the galaxy when we see him for the first time in Empire Strikes Back. And Vader has to chide him, no disintegrations, you know, because he's out there killing people when he's 5 years old or 15 or however old he is now. You know, he's putting together these groups. And the fact that all the bounty hunters, Bosk included, is giving it up that Boba is the leader, you know, says a lot. And I love that fact. And then we have the inclusion of Dengar, right? Which is, I've always liked Dengar. Even when I was a little kid, I always liked the sad bounty hunter, you know, because he was kind of a little overweight. You know, he's kind of gets beat up a little bit in some of the EU books. You know, he kind of gets kicked around by Boba Fett when they partner up in the Guild trilogy. And I love seeing Clone Wars Dengar with his little attitude. You know, he's kind of more sure of himself here. He's kind of like a jokey joke type of guy. And, you know, we know his story, so he couldn't like take any major punishment. But it was just nice to see him included, and it kind of made sense that he was hooked up with Bosk and Boba. So, all in all, love the episode.
All right, and Jen?
I'm right there with Barrett. I actually really liked this episode, too. I didn't think it was bad. Like, the ninja stuff didn't bother me. It's just like a form of martial arts. We see the Jedi doing, like, ninja-like flips and all kinds of crazy stuff all the time. And granted, they're Force-augmented, but doesn't mean that other people can't do it too. So that didn't bother me at all. I got a chuckle out of like the little ninja vanish puff of smoke thing that one of the guys did. But I thought this was fun. I liked getting to see Boba Fett. I liked that we got to see him out. I like this weird little camaraderie that they have with him and Bosk, how they're always kind of together. They were like prison buddies and now they're still working together. And that it's very interesting that Boba's in charge. I think that's really fun. And again, I like to see this development of Ventress where she's playing with this moral ambiguity that she seems to have access to now, or before she was kind of at the mercy of the Sith teachings and whatever Dooku wanted her to do. Now she can kind of just make her own decisions, do whatever she feels like. And it's kind of fun to see her stretching her legs a little bit, getting to do whatever she wants. So I thought this was a fun episode. I liked it. I liked the interesting concept of like an underground train. The planet had atmosphere that was so dense and intense that it would crush somebody. So they had to work underground. I thought that was really cool. I don't think we've seen that in the Star Wars universe before. So I thought this was a pretty decent episode overall.
Yeah, that was the dynamic of Ventress changing was one of the things that we did talk about with the first group on this episode. How last week, yeah, you were supposed to feel for Ventress, and this one did a good job of continuing to get her more on or to get the audience more on her side, which, as we saw by the end of the story arc, was something that was where they wanted us. So that worked pretty well.
So, well, this episode showed that she had a heart. It may not have been the biggest heart in the world, but it was definitely she was developing a bit of her own moral code instead of being led by everybody else. The fact that she, you know, freed the girl, even though she got paid for it, there was still – it wasn't something that maybe she would have done earlier in her development as a character. I thought it – you know – I think this whole two episodes really kind of showed us the shifting of Ventress from what was typically perceived of even some of the earlier writers as an evil character to a ambiguous, possibly confused, developing character. So in that respect, I did like it.
Oh yeah, I mean when we found out that there was a young female that was being kidnapped, I mean I called it from you had to have called it because that was Asajj. You know, she was a young female who got kidnapped, and there I thought after seeing that there was no way that Asajj was going to deliver this young girl to anybody except help her get her freedom. So, you know, as soon as I saw that, I knew that Asajj was going to take that route because, you know, she was feeling this little girl's pain. So, but I love that. They have built more on Asajj's character and how she feels inside and what her actions are going to be now that she's making her own choices. That, you know, little Ahsoka's being left in the dust. I'm sorry to say it, but, you know, this is some of the character stuff that we've been seeing from Ahsoka, and now Asajj is finally getting her due.
Well, this was really important to see this shift for what comes, what we see, how we see her behave in Revenge. Because I think that how she acts and what she does there wouldn't have been at all believable if we hadn't had this moment or these moments prior.
Absolutely. So now before we get into Brothers and the return of Darth Maul, let's hear what some of our listeners thought of Bounty.
Hey, Republic Forces Radio Network. It's Devis from the forums, and I hate to say it, but I think we got a filler episode last night. I mean, put these last four episodes side by side or in a line, however you want to say it. Massacre, Bounty, Brothers, and Revenge. Massacre and Bounty are connected, as we can tell. Brothers and Revenge are connected, obviously. But there's nothing to connect Bounty to Brothers, unless I'm seriously missing something here. They all involve, in one way or another, the Night Sisters and Asajj, but I mean, story-wise, there isn't anything to put two and two together. I mean, really, they could have just had these last four be two different two-part arcs, but you know, whatever. At first, I thought that maybe Boba and Bosk and company were going to be escorting something that ended up getting to Dooku or Talzin somehow. But no, that just turned out to be a mail-order bride, for lack of a better term. But, I mean, it was still a fun episode. It was a good thing to hold us over. It gave us some good, I want to say, exposition for Asajj, but maybe not. I don't know. It was nice to see Bosk and Boba back. I mean, of course, who can't go wrong with them? And along with the new additions of Heisinger and Latt. That's what their names. I really liked Heisinger. Just his look and how he spoke. Air quotes around that, because, I mean, you couldn't really understand them. But still, they were really cool. And the one weapon for lats, which at first I thought was some otherworldly fashion statement, turned out to be a chain whip, so that was really cool. And, well, we did get Dengar too, but I've never been really big on him, so, whatever. It was nice, I guess. But now that that's out of the way, what do you think this means for Asajj? I guess the question could be, because it's obvious, unless they do some serious, serious retconning here, that her storyline from the comics isn't going to be applicable anymore, or is it? I mean, what's going to happen to Asajj Ventress? What do you guys think is going to happen from this point on? And, I mean, other than that, we're finally on our way to the thing everybody's been waiting for. So I look forward to hearing your guys' thoughts on the episode and your eventual thoughts on this voicemail and everyone else's voicemail whenever you get around to that episode. So, yeah, I look forward to all that. Thanks, guys.
You're here with a mission, sir?
I am.
Trying to get me back in the world?
Trying to save it.
On May 4th, the most ambitious comic book movie of all times hits theaters. The Avengers.
You think you're the only superhero in the world? You've become part of a bigger universe. You just don't know it yet. I'm here to talk to you about the Avenger Initiative.
Now you can join Arnie, Jacob, and Stuart each week at NowPlayingPodcast.com as they watch and review all the Marvel films.
Guys, I'm bringing the party to you.
Iron Man.
Yeah, I can fly.
Captain America.
I knocked that Adolf Hitler over 200 times.
Thor.
You're big. Fought bigger.
The Incredible Hulk.
Dr. Banner, your work is unparalleled, and I'm a huge fan of the way you lose control and turn into an enormous green rage monster.
Ending with a weekend of release review of The Avengers this May.
How do we do this?
As a team.
You can find it all at NowPlayingPodcast.com.
Any last words? Hulk! Smash!
Finally, we get to it. After all of the buildup, now in the next episode, brothers, we get to see the return of Darth Maul. But before that, as mentioned in the beginning of this, our discussion here, and when we talked about it before, Savage Opress is going to do some walking. A lot of walking. And what did you guys think of Brothers?
Well, if nothing else, this was a good show for a drinking game. Every time he said, Brothers? Is that you, brother? Brother! Brother, 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 brother. There was more brothers in here than Undercover Brother. And yes, he did a lot of walking. I really enjoyed the snake character. When he finally gets, you know, with the magical dust and he gets to the junk planet that's similar to what we've known before, but is not exactly the same. I really like the snake character. You know, obviously we knew that the snake was going to turn on him as soon as you saw him. You know, the snake wasn't as dumb as he seemed to be. And, you know, in the previous podcast, people had mentioned that he was kind of like the Yoda character. I think Arnie said that, you know, he was the guide, you know, kind of fooling Savage. But this was kind of a Savage kind of building, character building episode where, you know, to this point, we've seen Savage as kind of this crazy, savage, vengeful character. And now he's kind of confused and, you know, he's more calm, you know, than any type of Sith apprentice that we've ever seen, you know, and it starts to bring the question now, you know, what's up with this rule of two? You know, that's all I kept thinking about this is like, what's up with the rule of two? We've got Ventress out there who's running around, who was a Sith apprentice that Dooku had said, this is my apprentice many times. Savage, who Ventress actually says that this was her apprentice. And now we're about to meet Darth Maul, who was an official Sith apprentice. So the rule of two is kind of just thrown out the window now, and I hope they kind of come back to that. But this was a great episode. I mean, you have there's some questions on why Ventress was back with the same bounty hunters that she kind of left in the dust back in the day. Like Boba didn't say anything about how, you know, she put him in that trunk, but when it started getting down to Darth Maul, and I'm going to leave it there. I'm not going to say exactly what my impression of Darth Maul when I saw him till we hear everybody, but it was not disappointing to me.
All right, Jen.
I had a hard time with it. Usually I don't mind stuff at a slower pace. I actually like some of the Senate episodes, stuff like that. This one, just the wandering around, the way they paced it, I had a really hard time. Like, I kept getting up and going and getting a drink in the middle of it. Like, I really couldn't focus on this one. I had a really hard time. And some of it was okay. Like, I liked seeing some of the planet stuff, some of the creatures, those weird mechanical beasts. And I kept waiting for something important to happen or for Savage Opress to have some, like, encounter with a character other than this weird snake guy. And I felt like I was just waiting the whole episode for something to happen. And, like, Darth Maul himself, I don't really know what I was expecting, but I wasn't expecting this. The way he was kind of completely demented and babbling to himself, and like they were saying in the first discussion, how like very like Gollum he was, and just it was very different from the quiet, brooding Darth Maul that we had seen. That I had a really hard time reconciling the two of them. It helped after the next episode, but this one I had a really hard time. I was kind of pulling back. It was really giving me a hard time suspending my disbelief because they were so radically different that I couldn't reconcile that they were the same character. But so this was probably my least favorite of the four.
All right. And Jonathan.
Well, like everybody else, I'm not sure how much of this episode was completely needed. It seemed to drag, and I think we could have condensed what we saw here and maybe added some of the initial parts of the second, you know, of the last episode of Revenge, in being able to then extend some things in Revenge. But everybody said that. I'm going to kind of look at the whole idea of bringing Maul back. I will admit that when that was announced earlier in the season, I wasn't sure I was going to be able to get on board with it at all. And like Arnie said, I needed to kind of just go, okay, I have to give it to him. I may not necessarily buy it, but I'll just give it to him so I can, you know, try to look at this episode. As far as the way Maul initially appeared, I actually kind of liked that. Because when you consider the trauma that he's been through, he is completely a broken individual. I mean, to survive not only the trauma to your body that he went through, but also the significant impact to his whole self-perception. And a lot of that is gotten into in some of the EU fiction that I've read, about how Maul viewed himself and his strength and weakness was not accepted. And his whole mental image of himself was surrounded in that. And that was just crushed. It was snapped. You know, I could believe that, you know, he'd be sort of dancing on that line of, you know, sanity, insanity, you know, spending time on both sides. But I don't know. I guess I kind of enjoyed that. I didn't necessarily enjoy the way he looked. I thought the big spider body thing was a little bit much. I think it almost would have been more interesting to see him, maybe even a little bit more fearful, scary to see him almost like dragging himself along without that, just almost literally being half an individual. And Ray says, well, how could he survive without the lower half? Well, this is a different species. We don't necessarily know what they need. I mean, that could have been, or it didn't even have to be that elaborate, but I don't know. There were good and bad parts of this episode. It didn't need to be this long. We didn't need the, you know, the little snake, you know, basically showing him around the planet and going, oh, well, look at this and look at this. Because it really, that part for me didn't feed into any part of the story that really felt like it needed a little bit more over these last two episodes to explain how, where he came from and where he was going.
What, you know, I saved my Darth Maul to hear what you guys had to say. And I agree with both of you. Why? I didn't mind the spider legs as much, but why do they have the abdomen? What was the spider abdomen for when it came to Darth Maul? That was the weird thing for me. You know, give him a few legs that he had to put together, or like you said, have him being kind of dragging himself around. But, you know, me being having an EMT background, you can survive having half a body, because basically a lightsaber kind of cauterizes the wound, and you have your lungs, you have your heart, you have your brain, you have everything that you need to function to stay alive. You know, what you don't have is a digestive tract, and maybe that's why he had the spider abdomen. Who knows? But I agree with a lot what Jen said about it was very hard for me to put two and two together. This is the same character that we saw in episode one. This is the same character that was Darth Maul and Shadow Hunter, you know, so sure of himself, and them to be kind of this decimated, emaciated ex-Sith Lord was very shocking. It was very shocking because when we see Darth Vader in episode three have his body basically demolished and have to be rebuilt, he kind of goes from this whiny character to even more sure of himself. You know, it did not, you know, the Chosen One was just as strong as anybody, you know, invincible as anybody. He thought he was as invincible as anybody else. But for him to get beat by Obi-Wan and have to be encased in this suit, it didn't, you know, granted, he didn't have to live by himself for years and years and years, but he was more adamant with himself, more evil, you know, about who he was and his power and stuff like that. So it was kind of shocking to see Darth Maul in this state and have Savaz keep trying to continually snap him out of it.
Well, to speak to that point, again, my perception, Vader did have somebody there for him, somebody to connect. I mean, you know, Palpatine, the Emperor, Sidious, what have you, was right there with him, connected, basically drew him back from the brink. And he had maybe, you
the
know,
snake. A day. He had the snake. Oh, I thought you said about Maul. Yeah, Maul had the snake.
Maul
yeah,
had the different. Snake. But, I mean, and Vader, when you read, again, some of the EU, Vader was having serious mental issues with his own place in his ability and grieving for the fact not only that he lost Padme, but he lost so much of himself, so much of his humanity. And you realize that when you lose that much, you know, flesh and bone and body, that your connection to the Force diminishes. So he had to, you know, he had trouble with that. He Dark Lord is the book that takes place right after Revenge of the Sith, where he is trying to cope with all these things and the fact that he doesn't see really anymore. He doesn't eat anymore. He can't feel anymore. He can't touch. And it's this whole sort of like completely breaking down of, you know, your internal perceptions and your identity. But he had the Emperor kind of goading him on and kind of directing him. And then there were some events that kind of helped him sort of galvanize his new place. But Maul didn't have that. The other thing, just really quick, and it occurred to me when I was watching this, they were still – when people talk about this episode, when they see this episode, they're really kind of using Maul and Darth Maul synonymously. But I don't think he's a Darth anymore. I think that when he – was defeated by Obi-Wan, he was in, I mean, and we don't know if Sidious knew about him or not, knew that he survived. But even if he did, he was almost kind of cast out. So he was no longer one of the Sith. To your earlier point, is that he was shown not to be worthy to be a Sith apprentice, and another one was sought.
Yeah, I agree with you. He's not Darth Maul anymore, because Darth is a Sith Lord title. You know, so he's basically just Maul, you know, but they never really called Savage Darth Savage, or, you know, gave him a Darth name either. So now you have these kind of dark force users who are just kind of ambiguously out there doing dirt. But I wonder how, and, you know, next episode we're going to talk about it. But even Darth Maul even says, you know, I was once a Sith Lord. You know, and he kind of remembers that. So it's going to be interesting to see what's going to happen in the future, next season or the following. What's going to happen with Maul?
Yes, it will definitely be interesting to see where he goes. And before we get too far into Revenge, let's see what some of our listeners thought of Brothers.
Hello, Republic Forces Radio Network. It's Zach, and I'm here to leave my thoughts on Brothers. All in all, I thought it was a very good episode. I really did like it a lot. First, I go into my thoughts on what I didn't like. I really kind of didn't like the little convenient plot device of Savage finding the dust on the cartons and saying it's a clue or whatever he said to get into that plant. Next thing I didn't like the intercutting of one scene we got Ventress for no apparent reason, another scene we got Anakin and Ahsoka going into that restaurant just after Savage left. I didn't like that. The only one that kind of did work for me was the very ending one with, you know, Obi-Wan saying, Darth Maul alive, you know, because if the preview says anything, then Obi-Wan's going to be continuing his season of pain next week, being beat up by Maul and Savage. Unless they're trying to say that Ventress, Anakin, Ahsoka, and Obi-Wan are going to be fighting against Savage and Maul next week, then I don't see what those were for. Another thing I didn't really like was, now, I don't know about this one, but Yoda and Obi-Wan know the name Darth Maul. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't think that the Council or any Jedi ever knew Maul's actual name. I don't think they ever knew he was named Darth Maul. Well, now I'm going to go into the things I really did like. I really like seeing Savage Opress again because he's probably my favorite character that they've made for the Clone Wars. And voiced by one of my favorite voice actors, Clancy Brown, who, I don't know if you guys noticed, but in some of the earlier scenes, he started sounding like the Kurgan from Highlander again. I thought that was kind of cool. Next, I really liked Maul, his look and everything. I thought he looked really cool, and I really liked the guy they got to voice him, Sam Witwer, who we might know as Starkiller or Sun from Mortis. I know that that's a trilogy most of us try to forget, but he was probably the best thing out of that trilogy. I was a little bit skeptical of having Sam Witwer being the voice of Darth Maul because I thought we would just be getting, he'd just be sounding like Starkiller all the time. And granted, he did sound like Starkiller for a while, but in the end, when he says, revenge, I must have revenge, or whatever, I started liking his voice. And from what I've seen for the preview for next week, I'm liking his voice even more. All right, well, those are my thoughts on Brothers. Bye.
All right, and let's jump into our exciting finale, Revenge, where Darth Maul finally finds his brains, and apparently Mother Talzin finds them.
Or at least sanity.
It all comes to an exciting conclusion. And let's start off this episode's discussion with Jonathan.
I had one problem with this episode. It was too damn short because this was great. I enjoyed almost everything about this episode. I enjoyed the sort of the recreation of Maul, the sort of bringing him back from the brink. It didn't bother me as much, you know, carving him those legs didn't bother me as much. I looked at it and it wasn't that she was necessarily carving his legs out of whatever material or summoning them from the ground. What I saw is that she was pulling from other things around, and there was a lot of discarded Separatist battle droids around. I think that there were components of his rebuilt lower half that were actually came from some of the battle droids that were there. But that's neither here nor there. I think that the sort of the new Maul was just an amazingly interesting character. You know, in his outlook, I thought he was sufficiently dark and, you know, very Machiavellian. It's like, well, we know what we need to do to get, you know, my revenge, to get the Jedi here, specifically Obi-Wan here, and we've got to slaughter the innocents. I thought that was just brutal, but very in line with what we would expect. I thought the duels, the four-way duel at the end was great. The banter between Obi-Wan and Asajj, I loved it. I really enjoyed it. The taunting, you know, Savage's taunting of Obi-Wan and trying to get him to sort of lose his focus and control, because I think, and this was talked about in the last episode about, you know, some people feeling that Obi-Wan, that may not have been, you know, Obi-Wan losing control like that may not have been in his, you know, in really his character structure. But if everybody remembers in Phantom Menace, he really was, when he rushes out from the force field to attack Maul, he is rage. He is looking for revenge. And Maul knows that about him. And he's had 10 years to dwell over every instance of that fight and knows how to push Obi-Wan's buttons. So I thought it was completely in line with the character. This is probably my favorite episode of the season.
All right, Barrett.
Oh, man. Did we know if Katie Lucas wrote this? Because we know that she wrote the first Savage Opress episode. Did she? It felt like this was Katie Lucas's hand in this.
All four of these were written by Katie.
Oh, what a great job. What a great job she did. You know, she is going to be the one to bring back Star Wars. Because you always have a lot of complaints about what Lucas is doing. But when she touches anything, it turns to gold. This whole thing of Mother Talzin coming back in and using her Sith Force witchery magic to bring back Darth Maul was brilliant. I mean, the visuals of Mother Talzin going in and kind of pulling out the disturbed part of Maul out of his brain. She does that a couple times to making him his new body. And she does use parts that's just all around laying around of her. And Darth Maul is back. And, you know, they had that Infinite comic of where, you know, Darth Maul had kind of these cyber Maul, as Arnie calls them, these legs, where he fights Obi-Wan. And she found a way to put it all together and actually bring it back so it's believable. And now we have the Darth Maul that I think everybody can agree of, that this is the Darth Maul that we want. You know, his horns are back. You know, before his horns were all broken and stuff like that, his horns are back to the right size. He's not so emaciated looking, and he has focus on who he needs to get revenge on. I mean, this was absolutely amazing. And I agree with you, Jonathan. It was not nearly long enough. Not nearly long enough. I could have seen the Obi-Wan, Asajj Ventress, Savage Opress, Darth Maul battle just keep going on and on and on. And did anybody love the way that Obi-Wan and Asajj were fighting together, like it was Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan fighting together? I mean, they were just kind of seamless going in and fighting these two guys. It was just great. So I loved it. I loved it.
All righty. Jen, what did you think of Revenge?
I liked it. I thought it was pretty okay. I've never been a big Darth Maul fan, so in some ways, I really like seeing him come back. In other ways, I feel like it's kind of silly, but like I think the problem I had with him is he kept, I don't know if it was his voice actor, I should have checked in to see who voiced him, but it felt like it was the same guy, or just maybe he was channeling the guy who did the brother in the Mortis arc. And that really kind of threw me out of the episode a little bit, because all I could think of was that terrible arc. But aside from my weird brain activity, I thought it was actually pretty well done. I liked that they brought Mother Talzin back long enough to kind of finish off this pair, and that they have this weird dynamic where Maul's definitely the leader, and Savage, despite having been the one who hasn't lost his mind the whole time, he's the follower and he's the supportive one. And I really liked seeing Ventress and Obi-Wan teaming up. I'm kind of really intrigued now about the two of them kind of adrift almost, or wandering around the galaxy in this little crummy ship escape pod. And I'm really intrigued for next season. But Maul was never going to be as big a deal to me as it is to some other people. Like, there wasn't enough to him. So he was very interesting, but like, this definitely wasn't my favorite episode of the whole series or the whole season, but I really enjoyed it.
Jen, good ear. That was the same actor, Sam Witwer, who did not only the Brother in the Mortis trilogy, but he's also Starkiller at the Force Unleashed games.
So he just sounded to me like generic emo Sith guy. So that really took me out of it. I wanted to really like Maul more, but I don't care for that voice actor. I know he does a really good job, but he's just not to my taste.
Well, based on The Force Unleashed and the Mortis trilogy, he is kind of generic emo Sith guy.
Oh, man, I got to ask the question, guys. How do we love that Maul is back sane and the first thing he does is go kill some children? I mean, and just torture innocent. He just goes straight for the innocent. You know, he knows exactly how to get the Jedi to follow him. He knows exactly how to get the Jedi to get to where he's at. And the first thing he teaches his brother is, you want some Jedi to come around? You got to start killing the innocent. And that's exactly what he does.
You know, it's funny. Last week when we talked about this episode, I thought that it was vague enough that my youngest didn't get it. Yeah, I was totally wrong on that, because over the course of this past week, my son asked to watch that episode again. He's like, can I watch the one where Darth Maul stands and turns on his lightsaber in front of the kids and said, we've got to kill the innocent? It's like, oh, Gavin, you weren't really supposed to pick up on that, son.
You know, it's funny what kids pick up, because Mother Talzin, to me, is not a character that has ever been in any of the movies. You know, it's like my son, I would think he's picking up on Obi-Wan and Anakin stuff. But, you know, he said he remembered Mother Talzin by name. You know, he was like, yeah, let's watch this again. And so I can see Mother Talzin. I'm like, it just kind of took me aback. So, you know, what kids do pick up and what they remember is not exactly what we think. So I got to kind of, it's almost like I got to kind of watch what I say around the house from now on. You know what I mean?
Hasbro, are you listening? We need a Mother Talzin figure.
We need a Mother Talzin figure with light up, with some kind of green stuff that she can put on her wrist and light up eyes.
I think we got like four waves of figures out of these episodes. Come on now. We've got Night Sisters, Zombie Night Sisters, Mother Talzin, a new costume for Asajj.
Two different costumes for Asajj.
Okay, two different costumes for Asajj. We got Dengar. We've got ninjas.
We got Abdomen, Darth Maul.
We got new Boba in his little armor. We got the droid whose name escapes me, the chick with the metal scarf. Yeah, we got
and Savage with his horn cut off.
Yeah,
we never found out how his horn got cut off.
That happened in the fray at the end of.
That happened last season.
Yeah.
Oh, did it? His horn got cut off. Who cut off his horn?
Either Saj or Dooku, because one minute he had it, and then when we flash back from a scene, it was cut off.
Ah, maybe your Mother Talzin has it. He's going to make a little voodoo doll out of Savage.
Heck, I would just settle for being able to find one of those armored Savages.
Having trouble with that, are you, Jonathan?
Oh, I just got one, Jonathan. I just got to give out a shout-out to Palamon. Palamon, you hooked me up. He hooked me up with one of those armored ones a couple weeks ago.
I bet they'll give us a Mother Talzin figure if we promise not to ask for Jocasta Nu anymore. They'll probably substitute.
That may be.
If I don't get made into an action figure, then it doesn't exist. I got to ask the group. So what do you think is going on with Savage and Maul? Because they get away. You know, none of them have any type of injuries or anything. You know, Maul still has his legs. Savage is, doesn't have anything wrong with them, didn't get any kind of amputations or anything like that. So I know it's pure speculation. Where do you think they went?
Well, my question was, is the control center, the cockpit, ejected as an escape pod. How easy is it going to be able to land basically the cargo bay and the engines without that?
One of the trivia things on StarWars.com said that it had like a secondary bridge in the cargo area, because since the cockpit is in essence the escape pod, that it does have full controls within the body.
Good to know. I was concerned.
The big question is, do you think that they'll resolve the issue with Maul and Savage running around early on in season 5, or do you think that'll be the finale to season 5?
Oh, I think they need to do it soon. I mean, well, what should happen and what will happen could be two completely different things. But I think that they need to resolve this, first of all, because I just think in looking at the universe, they can't have Maul running around. I think they need to resolve that storyline one way or another.
I totally agree, Jonathan. I'm sorry to interrupt. I totally agree with you. They cannot have Maul running around. This is too many characters now that do not show up in episode 3.
But
I'm sorry.
No, it's okay. Damn it, derailed my train. I don't know what they're going to do because, you know, I think certain story-wise choices don't make a lot of sense to me with the way they handle the Clone Wars. I mean, you would think that this storyline they would have done earlier in the season. This is what everybody was kind of hungry for after the Savage Opress arc last year, but they kind of strung us along, which I guess is kind of keeping interest. But I think if they don't resolve this in the first arc, or at least maybe in one of the first arcs, then a lot of people are going to be very, very unhappy. And truth be told, it wouldn't make sense. This is a major – the two of them are a major threat to the stability of the galaxy. And I'm thinking both sides are going to want to have this threat removed. You know, Dooku isn't going to want Maul and Savage running around. The Jedi certainly aren't. And, you know, at the end of the episode – Savage says to Maul, well, you know, the Jedi are going to be coming after us. And Maul goes, yes, I'm counting on it. So he's got a plan. I just hope we see it early.
Not only does Dooku do not want Savage and Maul running around, but now he's got Ventress running around. So now you got three guys who are running around that were pawns of the dark side that are potential threats to everybody around them, not just the Jedi, but to the Sith as well. You know, because it's only going to be a matter of time before Maul realizes that he got thrown away, that there was no disturbance in the Force because he did not die. So they did not feel that. So there's no way that you can tell me that Sidious did not know that Maul was still alive and he just discarded him, like you said, because he wasn't worthy. And that's not going to take a long time for Maul to figure out. But the only other thing that I wanted to bring up was how badass is Asajj Ventress in this one? I mean, she totally was like the Jason Voorhees, you know, of the episode where she's sneaking around and lurking around and kind of luring Darth Maul and Savage so she could save Obi-Wan. And I mean, this the ending was just great. I know we skipped over that part.
Not really sure I'd be comparing Asajj to Jason Voorhees. When I think of Jason Voorhees, I think of a big lumbering, you know, kind of juggernaut. And she was a lot more, you know, he doesn't plan. He just goes after. And she had a plan, but.
So it was more like Freddy Krueger.
Yeah. Right? I'd say she's more of a Freddy Krueger than a okay. Jason Voorhees. I can.
I'm sorry, Jonathan. I'm sorry. Yes.
Come on, man.
Freddy Krueger.
All right. Let's see what some of our listeners thought of Revenge.
Hey guys. I'm Garrett and I'm just calling in on the newest episode of Star Wars, The Clone Wars, Revenge. I really thought this was a good episode. I thought it was a good ending to a good season. I thought it was important that we actually saw the creation of Darth Maul's new legs. Because, I mean, it reminded me of Anakin Skywalker's rebirth in the Sith Chamber, or whatever it was called. It really reminded me of that with his screams of pain and all that. And when he's in the ship, he's acting a little crazy. He's singing, going, Kenobi, Kenobi, Kenobi. And I mean, I can understand that. He's lived in a cave for a long time, so I can understand that acting a little crazy. I thought it was really cool to see Obi-Wan and Ventress fighting together against Savage and Maul, because Ventress and Kenobi have always fought each other. And Kenobi's never really fought Savage before, except, like, in the Night Sisters trilogy, in the last episode, he was going to fight Savage, but Savage forced him and Anakin backward, so he never really fought him before, and I thought it was really cool to see Ventress and Obi-Wan actually fighting as a team, and I really like those funny remarks they made to each other. But I'm going to go ahead and go now. I'm a long-time listener, but this is my first time calling in because I never had the guts to do it before. So see you guys later. Love your podcast. Look forward to more new episodes. See you later.
Hi, Republic Forces Radio Network. It's Robert Dretzikari calling with my thoughts on the Season 4 finale arc. First of all, I have to admit, this is by far the best season finale we've been given thus far. Because it actually feels like, while it wasn't a cliffhanger, it does make you want to see what's going to happen next. I love the little bit of extra suspense that the whole Brothers arc has given us. Just wanted to bring up one topic. I know that you've mentioned in the previous podcast about whether or not why the Jedi can sense, you know, Maul's reappearance so much earlier, where so many other things turn out to be fuzzier, hazier to them. And I think the main thing is that whereas with most problems that have happened in the past, Maul's return is something he's trying to shout out to the galaxy. He wants to be noticed. He wants to spread his influence. So, whereas, you know, things that have happened, say, even with the destruction of Alderaan, that was not, the people on Alderaan were not planning, hey, we're all going to die now. This was, you know, an act that just occurred. Maul's return is something that he really wants them to notice, much like how he got the Jedi's attention with the slaughter of the innocents on that planet they went to. By the way, I really enjoyed the fact they have the call back or call forward to what happened with Anakin and with the slaughtering of the younglings. I was really surprised they actually went there on with the Clone Wars show. I think actually my favorite parts of the actual finale, Revenge, have to be a lot of the verbal interchanges between Maul, Obi-Wan, and even the Saj. I still get a chuckle out of the whole "I learned it from watching you" comment, and the Saj is funny back at the end. And I get a chuckle every time I see that scene. I've watched that episode about four times already. Still have a lot of thoughts and possibilities as to where they're going to go with this next season. And I've already posted a couple of my ideas on the board, so we'll see what happens from there. But all in all, an excellent way to wrap up Season 4. I think by far this has been their best season yet. Looking forward to hearing what everyone says and what your thoughts are on it. Have a good one, guys.
Hey, Republic Forces, this is Ryan. Just calling in to tell you my thoughts about the four-part season finale of the Clone Wars Season 4. I'm going to start off with Massacre, Episode 19. I thought this one was a pretty good episode. What made it good for me was the Grievous and Ventress fight, which I thought was cool because it had, like, six lightsabers and really cool. And the other good thing about it was the Army of the Undead by the Night Sisters that got resurrected by Daka, I think her name was. And I thought it was pretty cool that they basically wiped out the Night Sisters and all that stuff. Lots more magic with the voodoo doll. It was, like, weird and awesome at the same time. It's really weird. And the last point I want to make about that is the Defoliator coming back from, I think, Defenders of Peace. Interesting. Episode 20, Bounty, not much to say about it. I thought it was a decent filler episode. Cool to see Asajj as a bounty hunter, but that's about it. Episode 21, Brothers. I thought this one was an okay episode. I mean, the first 15 minutes was basically a Savage walking around a planet. But the last, like, 5 minutes were pretty cool. Darth Maul was pretty awesome. Great voice acting by Sam Witwer. That talking snake, I don't know how he talked, but that's Star Wars, I guess. He was really annoying to me, and I thought it was, like, interesting how everyone across the galaxy that, like, had the Force felt Savage and Maul reuniting. And that takes me to the last episode, season finale, episode 22, Revenge. I thought this one was a great episode. I mean, this really could be the best of the series, in my opinion. And it started out when Maul got transformed back to the way he was before. It was weird to see the, like, home, I guess, of the Night Sisters. like, just lifeless and dark, besides that one, like, table there where he was laying. Cool to see that he had those same legs that he had in that comic, where he did come back. That was non-canonical. Question, and I don't know if anybody can answer this, though. How did Savage get Maul's lightsaber? I don't know. But the best thing about this episode for me was the Savage and Obi-Wan fight against Darth Maul and Savage. I think this could be the best lightsaber fight in the Clone Wars, and I thought it was interesting that Asajj lost one of her lightsabers and apparently not getting it back. And speaking of Asajj and Obi-Wan, I thought it was just really cool that they were working together and actually having to work together to survive and escaping together, too. Maul looking for revenge now, and he's still alive, and I don't know, I think that's going to that's going to ruin continuity, and Maul's still going to be alive for season 5, and that's going to be interesting to see. So, guess I'll talk to you next season. Thanks for a great show. Bye.
All right, well, I want to thank Jen, Jonathan, and Berend, and all of our listeners who sent in voicemails, those who didn't get played and those who did, for joining us on this follow-up to the pivotal Darth Maul arc. And we will be back in 2 weeks for our big wind-up of the entire season 4, when all of our panelists will get together and talk about the highlights, the lowlights, and just our overall opinions on season 4. So until then, thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next time.
See you next time.
See you next time, Rockstar.
Take care, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Republic Forces Radio Network. Remember, we want your thoughts on the next episode of the Clone Wars series. You can leave us a voicemail at 415-508-JEDI every week from the time the new episode airs, and voicemails received by 1 a.m. Sunday morning may be included in our next episode. You can find our reviews of previous Clone Wars episodes, as well as our summer series reviewing the classic droid cartoon series, at our website, www.republicforces.com. And be sure to listen to our other Star Wars podcast, Star Wars Action News, covering all aspects of Star Wars collecting, from figures to high-end collectibles to Star Wars Band-Aids. Republic Forces Radio Network is hosted by Jerry, Arnie, Dan, Jen, Berent, and Nathan P. Butler of StarWarsFanWorks.com. Republic Forces Radio Network, RepublicForces.com, and Star Wars Action News are not affiliated with Lucasfilm or any other official Star Wars-related company. Star Wars and all of the Star Wars universe contains are copyright and trademark, Lucasfilm Limited, and no infringement is intended. Republic Forces Radio Network is a Venganza Media production. Copyright 2012. All rights reserved.
But I do have to agree with Jen that this is a game changer. Or, you know, Rockstar, you said it was a game changer. You know, you agreed with Nathan on that, that... usually at the end of a show, nothing really happens. But now we have a
Is anybody else gonna
Oh my god, we finally broke Berend.
Berend, what did you do? You're in an infinite loop.
What happened?
You went into an infinite loop of Yahaba, 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 Yahaba.
All I heard was a and then I was like, nothing for a second.
You started skipping your record.
Dude, that was weird.
That was weird.
We now have our outtake.
Wow. Was that Coney?
Oh, dude, that was, I don't know what you did, but it was, yeah.
For a what second, did you guys hear?
It was just you saying you have a, like, 100 times. Yeah. It was like those three words coming out of your mouth repeatedly.
You have it, you have it, you have it, you have it, you have it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, my God.
Yes. Whoa.
Yes. I think it kind of confirmed that deep down you're actually a robot.
I'm Dwight Schrute in the Michael Scott movie.
Oh, no.
But where did I stop? Where did you? What is the last thing that was coherent?
I can't even remember.
Game changer. Usually you have a.
Okay.
That's where it all went to crap.
All right, I'll stop there.